So we thought it would make a lot of sense to have some cars on the streets in Washington those days so that people in the media and in Congress would be able to say, look at these 100-plus mile-per-gallon cars. Where is the American auto industry when they're saying, well, we'll really try to get a couple miles more per gallon out of our fleet average? Why can't you do this?
I want you to imagine the future in motion, where all cars are green, bicycles rule, and public transit is fast, frequent, and fun. It's a world where mobility is sustainable and accessible to everyone, where energy is clean and abundant, renewable and affordable, where communities aren't just smart, they're intelligent and sensible. So come along and explore that world with me on EVWorld.com Radio. Hello, I'm Bill Moore, and you're listening to The Future in Motion on EVWorld.com. Last week, Mr. Kramer went to Washington, and he took his 100-plus mile-per-gallon plug-in hybrid Prius with him. Now he's back in California and ready to talk to EV World about that momentous event that got congressmen, senators, the governor of New York, and even the former director of the Central Intelligence Agency behind the wheel of not one, but two PHEVs. When we return, we'll talk to Felix Kramer, the founder of the California Cars Initiative.
We know that there are big changes ahead for our EV world, from fuel cells to peak oil, and that we must be ready to meet the challenges and the opportunities they present. That's why we've revamped our EV World bookstore to offer you titles that we know will be of value to you, both professionally and personally. Through our partnership with Amazon.com, you can order new and used books securely online at substantial savings. So look for the EV World book banner and shop smart.
I have with me on the telephone today Felix Kramer. Felix is the founder and guiding force behind the California Cars Initiative, which is putting real-world plug-in hybrids on the road in California, so at least a couple of them. Felix, welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
It's good to have you with us. I am just really pleased by the by what's happened here last week. While I was in Iceland, you were busily, and some colleagues were busily bringing plug-in hybrids to Capitol Hill. Tell us about that.
Well, what happened was we had been thinking about doing this for a while, and we decided to take the occasion of the announced meeting between the Big Three and President Bush, which was supposed to happen on the 18th of May. We decided to bring two cars to Washington before that, a couple days before. There was also a House Science Committee hearing on a new bill for plug-in hybrid cars. So we thought it would make a lot of sense to have some cars on the streets in Washington those days, Tuesday and Wednesday before the Thursday meeting, so that people in the media and in Congress would be able to say, look at these 100-plus mile-per-gallon cars. Where is the American auto industry when they're saying, well, we'll really try to get a couple miles more per gallon out of our fleet average? Why can't you do this?
Yeah, do you think that's why they postponed the president's meeting?
Well, the meeting was actually postponed at the president's initiative.
Okay.
Out of town.
Right.
And the Big Three came anyway.
Okay.
They met with members of Congress instead. And what they did basically was GM stepped up and said, we're pushing ethanol. And Ford kind of said, me too. And Daimler didn't have all that much to say. So we like ethanol. We like E85. It makes a lot of sense. But there are two real issues. One of them is that it's really easy for the car makers to say, well, we'll do our part. Cost them $100-$150 to make their cars flex fuel, and they've been doing it for years,
right,
and getting credits for cars that don't actually use the 85. But it enables them to then say, well, okay, we're going to help on the infrastructure, but it's really somebody else's problem. So give us another 10 years while everybody else fixes their the infrastructure, and we'll do our part making E85 cars. So it lets them off the hook. The second issue is that if you were to try to fuel the U.S. fleet with E85, you'd need 140 billion gallons a year of ethanol, and we currently produce a little less than 5.
Right.
And we're making the point that you need to marry plug-in hybrids and ethanol. If you fuel all the local miles from electricity, then you only need 40 billion gallons of ethanol, and that's really an achievable goal.
That's something, right.
So we wanted to kind of get in there and make the point that the car makers could be doing something now on making much better hybrids, and that that was the route toward toward reviving the U.S. auto industry.
Now, I noticed that there were actually two cars there. You had your car, but there was a second car there from Electro Energy. Kind of tell me a little bit about that. How did that car get there?
Well, that was a little bit of a surprise. We've been working with Electro Energy, which is a small public Connecticut company that has an innovative process for how to design and build nickel metal hydride batteries, biplanar technology.
Okay.
And so we've been working with them for more than 6 months to convert one of their cars. So it was Ron Gremban, our lead engineer, and the engineering people from Electro Energy in Danbury, Connecticut. And what we did was sort of a parallel process to what we did at the Maker Fair. Was we figured out a way to control the battery management using the Toyota's native system. And the reason that we did this process at a time when everybody's really talking about lithium-ion batteries is that we think there's still life in nickel-metal hydride batteries, and we in particular think that it's really important to be able to show the world and show Detroit that nickel-metal hydride batteries can make really good plug-in hybrids, because kind of the last objection that car makers have at this point to plug-in hybrids is the batteries aren't ready.
Exactly.
Lithium-ion technology is unproved and so forth. And there's certain element of truth to that, in that you don't have 10 years of a 10-year track record, but that's certainly not the case with nickel-metal hydride. These are batteries that car makers have been using for about a decade in hybrids. And so we wanted to show that a lithium-ion car, the Energy CS car that is my car that I drive every day, and this nickel-metal hydride car from Connecticut. So it was a great combination to have those two cars there, and the members of Congress got to see and be in both of them.
And the
Connecticut Senator Lieberman was able to drive in his state's car and so forth.
Now, when you're talking about the Energy CS, so we had the batteries that are in your car, are you using nickel or are you using lithium in those?
I got delivery of my car in early April. This is Energy CS's fourth prototype car.
Okay.
On the way to the eDrive commercialization, aftermarket conversion commercialization.
Right, okay.
So these, this car uses valence lithium-ion batteries.
Okay, good.
Despite the others.
Right, so we had actually two different battery chemistries there, but showing that you could actually do, you could use either chemistry and still achieve the kind of performance that we've been talking about.
That's right. And I mean, I've been spending a lot of time talking with people about batteries lately. And the concept that's really dawned on me is to really say, think back to the early days of computers when people would say, well, I'm not going to buy a computer this year because they're going to be better next year, or they're going to be cheaper next year.
Right.
And at a certain point, people said, I need a computer. This country needs a small fleet of plug-in hybrids now using the existing batteries. And, of course, the batteries are going to get better, but we can have great plug-in hybrids right now with today's batteries.
Right.
If we did have batteries that had 5 or 10,000 cycle charges and immediate recharge and all the other things that are promised with nano-lithium and so forth, then things will be even better. But right now we can do it.
Now, what's the difference between the performance of the two cars? Are they pretty much identical, or does the lithium have an advantage over the nickel metal hydride?
Well, just thinking in terms of low-speed electric range, the first car we did with lead-acid batteries and the car we did for the Maker Fair, which is now in Seattle, Ryan Fulcher's car, that has about a 10-mile range at all-electric low speed. The nickel metal has about 20, and the lithium ion has 25 to 30.
Okay.
And so there's two ways to think about it. It's low-speed electric only, or you kind of double that and you say, my car, the first 50 or 60 miles I drive every day, I'm going to be driving half electric and half gas. And because most people, you don't want to give the message to people that these are cars where you have to try to stay slow and stay under 35 miles an hour.
Right.
You want to drive it any way you want and let the car decide what to do.
Okay, so What kind of, you had from the photographs that I saw there, you had just about every significant politician on Capitol Hill either looking at or riding it or driving in these cars. Kind of, what kind of comments were you hearing from them?
Well, they were really thrilled. We had the ranking member of the Senate Energy Committee, Jeff Bingaman. We had people from the House Science Committee, lead sponsors of the Set America Free Fuel Choices for American Security Act. So we had about 10 senators and more than a dozen Congress people, and we had Jim Woolsey. We had New York State Governor George Pataki happened to be walking by one time.
I saw that.
We had a lot of people there, and since then, actually, Senator Clinton gave an energy speech a couple days ago where she said, I saw one of these cars just the other day at the House, and former Senator Daschle said a similar comment. And so that's beginning to percolate now, that in the press release on the House Science Committee hearing, they made a point of saying that after the hearing, Representative Judy Biggert from Illinois invited people to go out and look at real cars. So that's really what's happening, and now they can see them.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about the Set America Free bill, and I understand there's also another one that is specifically the wording in the title of it has to do with plug-in hybrids. What can you tell us about those initiatives?
Set America Free Fuel Choices for American Security Act is a bipartisan and bicameral. There are House and Senate versions. They differ slightly. And they're designed to incentivize and commercialize a range of technologies, including plug-in hybrids. And they actually have a really significant percentage of the members of the House and Senate who have already signed on. And they're serious about taking that bill all the way through. The other bill is one of several bills that have been introduced recently for plug-in hybrids or for related technologies, and it's actually much more focused on specific amounts of money for plug-in hybrid research and for commercialization and incentivizing fleets. And we're really glad about that because while we're delighted at the general attention to plug-in hybrids, we really want to emphasize that R&D is not the main point now. The main point is actually getting some cars on the road. That's what I think the auto companies need help on. That's what Plug-in Partners is working on too. That's the what used to be Plug-in Austin,
right.
the national fleet buy campaign. They actually have a third of the top 50 cities in the country now signed on. So this is a kind of a multi-pronged effort that's happening in Congress, that's happening among municipalities and companies around the country, and in the media and so forth.
Now, are you concerned at all about, if you build this momentum behind this thing, that you're raising people's expectations on, these cars being just around the corner in terms of, obviously, do we have the supporting infrastructure to provide enough batteries for these vehicles and a service of those vehicles and things of that nature?
I'm a little concerned about the expectation issue because the key issue is getting a car maker behind it. And that's what you could say that all of these things we've been doing have been focused on that one issue. And that's one reason why we've been focused in the last couple of weeks at the same time as doing all this on trying to get Ford to agree to a small prototype program. People are going to... They do want to see something happening next, and we hope it'll be Ford. If not Ford, someone else. Conversions are only a part of the story, and so we hope between the combination of public pressure and conceivably some congressional incentives, the XPRIZE, which may announce a program soon, a bunch of these things, we hope a car maker will step up. In terms of the other aspects of the infrastructure, certainly the charging infrastructure is there. Nighttime recharging can handle tens of millions of vehicles. Battery production, we think there's enough capacity for battery production for a while. And in terms of expectations in the bigger picture, in normal times the fleet turns over about 10% a year. So if car makers were busy building plug-in hybrids, it would be a while before they actually had an impact. Now, that doesn't take into account the kind of extraordinary situation we're in, where a rapid rise in fuel prices, a disruption in the fuel infrastructure, could put us into a kind of a Pearl Harbor situation in this country where we decide to rapidly ramp up plug-in hybrid production. Now, still, we'd have the issue of replacing cars in the fleet. So it would take a while for them to come into play. But I think that's really a possibility. We might be in that situation. And if you talked to me a year ago, I would have said we're not in the mind's eye of the public enough. But right now, I think if we do have a crisis and leadership in Congress and in the auto industry looks around and says, what can we do right now, they're going to go right into plug-in hybrids.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about, since you're talking about the initiative with Ford Motor Company, I understand that you've been working, trying to get them, to commit to some kind of a program, and also been using a little bit of leverage on the part of the shareholders. Tell us a little bit about that, how that shareholder meeting, all that came about.
Well, we've been in private conversations since last fall with people on the business and technical side at Ford, and we proposed, and this is a California Cars Initiative, and Andy Frank, the inventor of the modern hybrid, professor at UC Davis, we proposed a very simple agreement with them. Basically, we drafted a paragraph that said that Ford is delighted that people are using their Ford Escape Hybrid as a platform for further development. And Ford has a real challenge at this point. They're increasing their hybrid production by a factor of 10, which is a huge challenge for the company. So while Ford does that, they're happy that we're going to turn some of their Escape hybrids into plug-in hybrids. So essentially we're asking their permission to do something to make really good cars, the Ford Escape Hybrid, much better cars. And that was the proposal we made to them. And it's kind of a proposal that requires no resources from them. It requires a kind of suspension of disbelief. If they're skeptical about whether there's a business model, whether there are customers, whether this can be done, we'll handle all of that and we'll show what we can do. And so that proposal was kind of percolating up through management at Ford at a time when, and there were quite a few advocates inside the company for it. And at the shareholder meeting on the 11th of May, Bill Ford was asked about this and was asked, I understand that that a proposal has been made to you. And he replied that they were keenly exploring it. And I don't believe he, I think he uses his words carefully. And so I think that's certainly a lot higher indication of interest than simply saying, well, we're looking at it. But they're not ready to, he said they were not ready to announce anything.
Sure.
And we still hope that they'll be ready to announce something. So the day after that shareholders meeting, we released the text of the letter, which had the actual proposal and then the paragraph that we were asking them to sign. We released that. And we said, we hope that they will agree to this next week before or at the meeting with the president. Now, that meeting has been postponed to June 2nd, and we still have our hopes up that they'll go ahead with this. And a lot of people are looking at it and saying, this is a good idea for Ford. This is a way for them to jump ahead in terms of technology and take the environmental mantle of leadership in advanced hybrids and run with that. So we hope they're going to do it.
Yeah, it would seem to make sense. I know I've driven the Escape Hybrid, around Minneapolis, and on a couple of occasions, it was running right along with traffic and with the electric motor only running, and the gasoline engine was turned off. So it seemed like it would be a fairly easy step beyond that, although I'm sure it's far more complicated technically than what I would assume it is. But still, you're proving, and certainly High Motion up in Canada is working on a plug-in version of the Escape Hybrid, that's something that's certainly doable. So let's maybe ask, so you've had this opportunity to have your hearing on Capitol Hill. I mean, Andy Frank was there. Were you a part of the hearings, or was it just Andy that was part of it?
Actually, Andy Frank was there. Mark Duvall from EPRI was there.
That's right.
And fellow from Honda was there as well, and everybody was pretty. And Dan Santini from NREL, National Renewable Labs, or Argonne Labs. Actually.
Argonne Labs, yeah.
And they were all very positive about this bill. John German was the fellow from Honda, and they were all basically saying, "Yes, let's go ahead and put some more resources into plug-in hybrids." So that was great. And the chairwoman of the committee introduced me and invited the members to go out and look at the cars. And
okay.
At that point, I held up this this dongle, which has become the star, was the star of the Washington event. It's a foot and a half long cord, and on one side it has a three-prong twist plug, a twist jack, like you use for a refrigerator.
Right.
On the other side, it has a regular 120-volt plug, and so it, one side goes into the car and the other side goes into an extension cord, and so I lifted that up and said, I've brought along the infrastructure for the car.
Yeah, I saw that in some of the photographs on the Set America Free site. I was wondering what that was. I also understand now. All right, so what's next for you, Felix? Where do you go from here?
Well, we're continuing. There's a bunch of major media coverage coming up in the next month or two, so we're continuing on that. We're co-sponsoring some of the events that are going on, such as the premiere tonight in San Francisco of the Gore film on global warming.
And, oh, good.
And month, the Who Killed the Electric Vehicle.
Right.
We're doing those kinds of things. We're continuing our technology development on the Prius conversions. We hope to take the Maker Faire project and convert that into a manual and an easy way to order parts so that any 04 to 06 Prius owner can round up an engineer or an electrician and devote about a week of time for two people, and they could convert their Prius into a lead-acid plug-in hybrid for under $3,000. So that's a goal. We're continuing on nickel metal development. We're hoping to get more people with business and engineering skills into Calcos so we can do some lithium ion battery projects. We're pushing to actually start the Ford project, and it's conceivable that if we continue not to get any answer, that will happen independently. And we're working with Andy Frank, who has some ideas about doing other commercial projects on plug-in hybrids. And then we're also thinking about some ambitious new ideas for energizing people all over the country on a local level to promote plug-in hybrids and to promote the plug-in partners petition campaign.
Very good.
So we have a lot to do. We're only three people, and we're trying to get more resources to be able to do as much as we want.
Yep. What's happening? I know we had talked some time ago about the potential of commercializing this. Is that sort of part of this effort? Or
there are potential opportunities in a number of ways to commercialize the intellectual property that is involved in some of these conversions. Right now, everything we're doing for the Toyota Prius conversions is open source. And at the same time, we're really excited that the eDrive cars will start coming out in the next couple months, and we intend, my car is kind of a poster child for how well designed that car is and how good it is for people who have $10,000 to $12,000 to spend on a conversion. And so we'll see what happens with that, what happens with the high motion cars. Maybe there'll be other entrants into the area as well. Or maybe a car maker will just step up and do something now.
Right. So you're saying, I guess maybe clarify for me here that the cost now is right around $12,000 or so to do a conversion of the Prius?
The announced prices for the aftermarket converters is in that range.
Okay.
eDrive says that they're starting with High Motion says they're starting with fleets and won't have cars for individuals for a year or so, and they're talking about 10. eDrive is talking about a goal of $12,000. Not clear whether the first cars that come out will be at that price sometime this summer, hopefully.
Okay. All right. Great. Excellent. Felix, thank you.
It's been a pleasure. I always really love talking to you because you know you know so much about this, and you've been following it forever.
Yeah, well, maybe we're both starting to gain some traction now, huh? Oh, yeah, when is Woolsey converting his Prius?
Woolsey is just one of many people who are eagerly waiting to convert their Priuses. And,
good.
And when we brought two cars to Washington, it was like a frustrating teaser for some of those people.
Yeah, I'm sure. Great. Thank you, Felix.
Okay.
All right. All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to an EV World Internet radio production. For more information on this and related topics, visit EVWorld.com.